Welcome to Today on Broadway for Tuesday, January 24th, 2017. I'm Broadway World's Matt Tamanini.
And I am Broadway Stars James Marino.
James, before we get to a super busy day in theatrical news, I wanted to start off by wishing my parents a happy anniversary. My mom does occasionally accidentally listen to this, even though she has really no idea about the people or shows that we talk about. So just in case she listens, happy anniversary, guys. So yeah. So
get some pizza.
They actually do that for their dating anniversary. They actually celebrated this past weekend because they're going to be working tomorrow. But, you know, it's good times. Good times, great oldies in the Tamanini household.
Excellent. The full cast and crew team is announced for Sunday in the Park revival.
Finally. Finally, James. Finally. Yes, finally. With just 19 days before the first preview, the Ambassador Theater Group has announced the complete cast and creative team that will be joining Jake Gyllenhaal and Annalee Ashford in the reopening of the Hudson Theater with a revival of Stephen Sondheim and James Lapine's Sunday in the Park with George, which is scheduled to begin performances on Saturday, February 11th. Today is January 24th. We are just learning who is in this show. This production was born out of the City Center Encores concert last year, which starred Gyllenhaal and Ashford, as well as a host of other stars. Returning from the concert production are Tony nominee Brooks Ashmanskas, Tony winner Ruthie Ann Miles, Tony nominee Philip Boykin, along with Claiborne Elder and Liz McCartney. While big-name talent like Carmen Cusack and Zachary Levi are not continuing from concert to Broadway, there are plenty of other stars joining for the main stem run, including Tony winner and House star Robert Sean Leonard, which was kind of a surprise to me, along with Tony nominees Michael McElroy and Penny Fuller, as well as Ashley Park, Aaron Davey, and our friend Andrew Kober, who should be launching the Andrew Kober Show right here on Broadway Radio in the next few weeks. Now, James, since there is a significant amount of turnover from the concert to Broadway, I don't really know what to make about this announcement coming so late. It could just be that the majority of the cast has already been rehearsing, and maybe there were just one or two cast members, maybe even understudies, that they needed to sign contracts before they made it public. Or this could mean that the show will be staged more like a concert and not a fully imagined production, which would also explain the short 12 days of previews. However, I've heard a few whispers that it will be more fully staged than it was at Encores. So I'm not exactly sure what would be a logical explanation as to wait this long before until the show opens for a show that is fairly intricate in terms of the musicality of the show, even if there's not a whole lot of fancy staging. Do you have any thoughts? Obviously, it's all conjecture on our part, but do you have any thoughts about what this could tell us about the upcoming production?
I don't know what it tells us about the upcoming production as much as it tells us about the producing team. And so maybe they felt that, you know, this was less of a priority than other things that they needed to get done. So, I could say maybe they want to line up a lot of their media and press closer to the their first performance, so they can generate more buzz and ticket sales rather than dragging out announcement after announcement after announcement, as we'd see with other shows. Yeah. You know, 6 months away, and every week we have another announcement that the somebody is going to be joining the costume dressing team.
That actually is a really good idea that I hadn't thought about, because this was, I think, the last show announced for the Broadway season, with a pretty short turnaround from the announcement to when the show actually begins previews. Now, obviously, they'd been working on it before it was announced, but that could have something to do with it. They know they didn't have the long lead up that some of these other productions take advantage of. So maybe they are trying to maybe hit with big fireworks rather than, you know, little hits along the way.
Yeah. All right. So let's talk about last week's grosses.
All right. Coming off of the Martin Luther King Day holiday weekend, obviously the holiday was on Monday, but the weekend previous probably saw higher tourists in town. It was to be expected that there would be a downturn in grosses, and there was, with only four shows seeing week-to-week gains, those being Hamilton, up a whole whopping $461.
Half a seat.
That's wrong, James. Don't even joke. In Transit was up $8,000. Oh Hello closed its run with a $42,000 increase, and Dear Evan Hansen improved by over $50,000. As a whole, the week was down 16.18% from the previous week, while also losing three shows from the running show roster. However, compared to last year's comparable week, sales were up nearly $10 million despite having nine fewer shows. Now, James, if you remember what happened in mid-January last year, you'll probably know that there are some Blizzard-related reasons for that discrepancy. However, with its modest gain, Hamilton remained the only show above $2 million last week at just under $2,452,000. It was followed by The Lion King, Wicked, Book of Mormon, Aladdin, Great Comet, Dear Evan Hansen, and Front Page, all above seven figures. The biggest dip of the week was School of Rock, dropping over 212,000, but for the family-friendly shows like School of Rock, Aladdin, Cats, Lion King, and even On Your Feet, which fell to just over $683,000, for a mid-January week, none of them did that badly, I don't think, James. The only two shows below half a million dollars were Jitney at $270,000-ish, and that was its opening week, so it was obviously hurt with some comp tickets and press tickets in there, too. And In Transit, that was at $334,000. While we continue to bemoan the prospects of In Transit moving forward, and it wouldn't surprise me if they announced its closing at any moment, to its credit, it has been steadily growing at the box office. In its 11 weeks on Broadway, it has seen gains in eight of those. And when you consider the first week, that doesn't really count because it's not picking up on anything. So it's done really well considering that some of those were the holiday season. So then it had to fall back after those. That's not something to sneeze about. It is still doing barely even modest numbers, but it is continuing to grow both in box office and percent of gross potential. Attendance last weekend In Transit was at 92.4%, so there were clearly some heavy discounts and or papering going on to get the people there, but there were butts in seats, and if they're not going to close the show and cut their losses, I guess getting people in the house is at least a step in the right direction, James.
Absolutely. You know, if they can keep getting butts in seats and slowly but surely get the average ticket price on the north side of it, then that's a good producing plan to have a show survive on Broadway. The thing that I'm going to say is this time next week when we're talking about Jitney, it wouldn't surprise me if Jitney were the largest percentage gainer of the week next week, because I saw it on Saturday. Michael and Peter also saw it, and all of us raved about it. It's amazing. I mean, you have to see it. Even if you're not a completist and you have to see all the August Wilson shows, this standing on its own is just an amazing, amazing piece of work. And Peter talked about on This Week on Broadway on Sunday that this is a good argument for that Ensemble Tony Award.
Oh, that's a really good thing. Yeah, that's a good thing. If anyone is going to argue for that, Peter would be a good person to put it in historical perspective. I do know that Laura Hayward, Broadway Girl NYC, she went and saw it over the weekend, maybe on Saturday as well, James. And then she went to a matinee and then went back and bought a ticket for that evening's performance. So she loved it so much, she saw it twice in one day over the weekend. So that shows you that this is a pretty special show. We read the reviews last week and it was pretty glowing reviews, but it's good to hear that it's getting well received from all corners of the theatrical community.
My husband works in the neighborhood. I'm coming twice more times.
Stop. Why? We haven't had a Madge sighting in a long time.
So I don't know where this comes from. If you're a listener and you can tell me what that quote was from, email us at matt@broadwayradio.com or James.
No, I don't want your emails. No, don't email me. Don't include me. I don't want to hear it.
No. It's a very funny reference. All right. What's up in the show and casting news?
Well, there's a bunch of news, so I'm going to go through them really quickly. James, if there's something you want to talk about, feel free to jump in and stop me. First off, it was unofficially announced at their reunion concert a few weeks ago, but yesterday, producer Joey Parnes announced that Bright Star would launch a national tour in the 2017-2018 season. No casting or tour stops were officially announced in Parnes' official press release, but yesterday, Theater Under the Stars did announce that the show would play Houston in March. Sticking in the central part of the country, James, yesterday, the St. Louis Muni Theater confirmed what we expected, that Tony nominee Beth Malone will lead the regional theater's upcoming production of The Unsinkable Molly Brown, directed by Kathleen Marshall. Malone has been rumored to lead a Broadway revival of the show since long before Fun Home, when Marshall directed her in a 2014 production at the Denver Center Theater Company. James, if this does well from July 21st to 27th in St. Louis, I would not be surprised if a Broadway announcement eventually followed. A few days ago, the Daily Mail announced that London's National Theatre will produce the world premiere of Disney's Pinocchio in December of this year. John Tiffany will direct, and Matilda book writer Dennis Kelly will write the book, based in part on the iconic 1940 film. Lazarus book writer Enda Walsh was originally slated to write the book, but she had to withdraw due to time constraints. Interestingly, the production will not be produced by Disney. Disney will just provide rights to the songs and story. Apparently, Pinocchio will be played by an actor, while the other roles will feature puppets. Now, I don't know if that means every other role will be played by a puppet, or if just some of them will, but that's a kind of an interesting take on it. But that really shouldn't be a surprise. Tiffany, of course, is currently represented in London with Harry Potter and the Cursed Child, which apparently has some pretty inventive staging in it. And the National Theatre is, of course, responsible for the inventive shows War Horse and Curious Incident and many, many more. Speaking of inventive shows, on Saturday, Emmy winner Wayne Brady was injured during the matinee of Hamilton in Chicago just about 10 minutes into the performance. He was quickly replaced by his understudy, leaving the audience a little bit confused before an announcement was officially made at intermission. According to a spokesman for Broadway in Chicago, Brady sustained a minor calf injury but was back in the show on Saturday night and again on Sunday, and will be back in the show later today, so no harm, no foul there. We wish the best to Mr. Brady. Now, going from one TV star to another, MCC recently announced that Golden Globe nominee Chrissy Metz, one of the big three on NBC's This Is Us, will lead a one-night benefit reading of Neil LaBute's Fat Pig, which LaBute will also direct. The reading will take place at the Lucille Lortel Theater on March 5th. Metz, who also was featured on American Horror Story Freak Show, stars in, I think it's pretty safe to say, the biggest TV hit from the fall season, This Is Us, which was recently renewed not for one season, but for two additional seasons. And finally, in a little run here of stories about theater stars coming to the stage, Once Upon a Time star Jennifer Goodwin will apparently lead a Los Angeles production of James's favorite show, Nick Payne's Constellations, at the Geffen Playhouse beginning on June 6th. Her co-star has not yet been announced, but tickets are on sale now. Her Once Upon a Time co-star, Joshua Dallas, could play the male part in that, considering Jennifer and Joshua are also married in real life. In addition to playing Snow White / Mary Margaret on Once Upon a Time, Goodwin also provided the voice to Zootopia's first rabbit police officer, Judy Hopps, in Disney's Golden Globe winning animated movie Zootopia. So she's got a lot going on for her there. So, James, lots of show and casting stuff in there. Anything catch your eye?
Jennifer Goodwin, Big Love?
She was in Big Love, yes. She was, that's really her first TV credits were on, or some of her first TV credits were in Big Love, the HBO polygamy show.
Oh, we could have a whole discussion about Big Love.
Please don't. Please
all
don't.
Right.
That was a song from Memphis. I believe James Monroe Iglehart sang a song called Big Love in Memphis, didn't he?
Yes, I think you were correct.
Absolutely. All right, good
reference there. So, Constellations, one of my favorite shows. I could fly out to the West Coast to see that because I love Jennifer Goodwin.
I'm sure you do, but you hate Constellations. So,
yeah, maybe the second time I'll like it better.
Or if not, maybe 15 minutes in, it'll change to something else.
Ooh, I see what you did there. All right, what's up in the TV musical news?
Well, we're actually not going to abandon Once Upon a Time yet because yesterday TV Line reported that the live action show, if you're not familiar with it, that mines the treasure trove of fairy tale and Disney animated characters for a half fairy tale world, half real world TV show, is currently planning on having a musical episode airing this spring. In recent seasons, Once Upon a Time has brought in characters from Frozen, The Little Mermaid, Aladdin, and many other musicals to join the show. So it seems like a natural extension of what they already do. In a recent interview, Jennifer Goodwin and her co-star Jennifer Morrison, who is about the same age as her but also plays her daughter, don't ask if you haven't watched the show, they say a lot of the characters or a lot of the actors on the show sing as well. They're not necessarily a ton of musical theater people, but they do sing. So it'll be interesting to see what they come up with. But the one that really excites me, James, speaking of musical TV episodes, last week it was reported that the CW superhero shows Supergirl and The Flash will air their long-anticipated musical crossover episode on March 20th and 21st. As you may know, Supergirl is played by former Glee star Melissa Benoist, and The Flash is played by Grant Gustin, who also had a guest arc on Glee, but also played Baby John in the 2010 national tour of West Side Story. The show's other stars confirmed to sing are some people you might have heard of, James, namely Jesse L. Martin, Victor Garber, John Barrowman, Jeremy Jordan, and Carlos Valdez, who is a replacement in Once on Broadway. Obviously, all of those gentlemen have extensive Broadway musical experience. In addition, it was announced that the two episodes will feature the villain, the Music Meister, which will hopefully semi-explain why everybody's singing, and the Music Meister will be played by Glee and Broadway favorite Darren Criss. James, considering that Jeremy Jordan is an Ohio State fan, thanks to his wife, Broadway favorite Ashley Spencer, I honestly don't know if this could make me more excited and hit more of my individual fandoms.
So we'll have to have a special episode just about this.
I have a feeling that I could probably do multiple podcasts just about this. So we might have to. Maybe I'm efforting, as they say, to get some interviews with some of the people from the show leading up to this. So maybe we will have some audio if anybody from the CW replies to my emails.
All right. So who is saying, but I'm dancing as fast as I can?
I recognize. I can't place it. What is that?
Well, it's Michael Flatley about his O&M bill.
Oh. Yeah, apparently Broadway press agency O&M has filed a lawsuit in New York Supreme Court against the Lord of the Dance, Michael Flatley, for breach of contract. The disagreement is over $42,246.56 in fees and expenses from Flatley's farewell show, Lord of the Dance, Dangerous Games, which ran on Broadway from November 2015 through January 2016. Apparently, O&M contacted him for months and has been unable to get any restitution, so they have filed suit. James, based on the surprisingly disappointing grosses from the show's run on Broadway, maybe Flatley just doesn't have the cash to pay. Then again, he and his dancers did perform at last week's inauguration, so maybe he could ask President Trump for some cash.
Oh, or like Trump is going to pay anybody for that. It wasn't such a good inauguration.
Yeah, I mean, stiffs people and bills all the time. I guess maybe that's why Flatley and Trump are friends. I don't know that they're friends. He performed, so whatever.
Let me look here. I'm looking at the... I was going to say maybe it was produced by somebody else in the production company, but here it is, produced by Michael Flatley.
Yeah, well, they're
directed by Michael Flatley, choreographed by Michael Flatley.
Yeah, there were three other production companies named in the suit, so it's not just Flatley, but with his name all over it, like you said, as producer, director, and choreographer and star, and his name is synonymous with Lord of the Dance. He is obviously the one taking the brunt of this. But to be honest with you, James, I feel like he has a fairly sizable net worth, and you can hear me typing. I am looking it up now. He is estimated to have. A net worth of $304 million. Pay the freaking $42,000, Flatley. Let's go.
Absolutely. Seriously. And I'm looking here at IMDb. It's got produced, created by, directed by, choreographed by Flute Michael Flatley.
And $304 million doesn't
what
just
a
come
out of nowhere. Idiot. Oh my God.
I'm really going to be interested to keep that in there tomorrow, James.
All right. So, Al Silbs explains the musical alternative facts.
Yeah, yesterday our friend Alexandra Silber took to Twitter to attempt to explain musical theater with her own alternative facts. If you don't know what this is referencing, you probably haven't gotten anything from the last segment of the show. Some of my favorites were alternative fact. 1.5 million Trump bones led the big parade. Alternative fact, this just in. Jamie and Kathy Wellerstein celebrate 15 years back at Central Park. All. Alternative facts, Emile Dubuque did not kill that guy. That guy ran into his knife. Ran into his knife 10 times. So these are great. I've loved every one of them. And she just kind of has been rattling them off all day. She did one of those Twitter moments that you can make that will collect all of them as she continues to use hashtag musicals explained. Musicals explain. Sorry, not explained. Hashtag musicals explain. So we have the link in there, or you can just check it out on Twitter. Hashtag musicals explain. They're really funny. I love Al Silber. She's just hilarious, and this has been really fun. Kind of with all of the ridiculous, terrifying things that involve the other alternative facts, to have some musical theater ones. They're pretty good. Yeah.
Also, before we wrap up, we have to send out a quick, shall we say, apology to Jim Thorpe.
I'm actually halfway through writing him an email, and I haven't finished it. But Jim sent us an email, a good friend, a longtime listener, and told us that he was quite angry at me because I insinuated that the Broadway Con audience would not be old enough to consume alcohol. He told me, I believe he lives in Indianapolis now. Jim is coming from Indianapolis to Broadway Con, and he is quite old enough to drink alcohol. He was upset by my cruel generalizations that bombarded his eardrums. So I apologize, Jim. I was going to send you an email, but James threw it up on here. So I'll let that be. I don't want to push my luck, but enjoy it. I'm not saying that every attendee of Broadway Con will be under the age of 21 or even 25, but I would venture to guess at least a plurality will be of the millennial generations.
Hey, did we get any update on the Broadway Con story?
I have not seen anything. I imagine that there was some sort of discussions today between Broadway Con and Actors Equity, but nothing official that I have seen, or even semi-official or rumored. I haven't heard anything at all. So hopefully they continue to get that worked out. Again, we're not exactly sure how much it actually impacts, because I don't think it really impacts the panels or the autograph sessions. But when it comes to the performances, that's definitely something that some of the people who are going to Broadway Con want to see. So hopefully they get that figured out. So whatever performing they are able to do, gets kept on that schedule.
And there's a huge rainstorm and windstorm here in New York. So I just want to tell Debbie Schrager, leave the blimp home. Take Amtrak. All right, Matt, why don't you get us out of here?
Lord, this has been a weird one. All right, thanks for listening today on Broadway. Follow us on Facebook and Twitter at Broadway Radio, and you can find me on Twitter at BWWMatt, and subscribe to Something Like a Pop on iTunes, Stitcher, or Google Play.
And my name is James Marino from BroadwayVideo.com and BroadwayStars.com. Thanks for spending some of your Tuesday with us, and we'll be back and talk with you tomorrow.
Pay your bills, Flatley.
Yeah.